Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Yo, yo, welcome to a post-game edition of the Forum Club. I'm your co-host, Jovan Buha, Lakers beat writer for The Athletic. And on Thursday night, the Lakers defeated the Denver Nuggets 114-93, a commanding 21-point victory, behind a 68-35 second-half advantage. This game started with Denver being in the lead for the first 2.5 quarters or so, really looking like they were potentially going to get a statement win in LA. The Lakers were going to drop to 4-5 at Staples Center. Nikola Jokic, who's been picking up steam in the MVP conversation, would, you know, probably take the front runner spot pretty clearly if they won. And then the Lakers turned it around in part with that new bench lineup of Trez, LeBron, Kyle Kuzma, THT, and Alex Caruso. We also saw some minutes from this big funky lineup with AD in there and THT basically at point guard. Frank rolled with the 9-man rotation, and that seems to be a thing. I asked him about that post game. Pregame, he said that he enters each game with an idea of how he wants to approach the rotation, how many guys he wants to go with, when he wants to use those guys. So I asked him postgame, you know, now that the Lakers have gone 3-0 since changing the rotation ahead of the Boston game and beaten three good teams, you know, Boston, Atlanta, Denver, all playoff teams. Two of those teams should have home court advantage in their respective conferences in Boston and Denver. So I asked Frank, what does this mean moving forward, right? Like, you found this groove with the 9-man rotation. You guys are 3-0. How do you approach, you know, reintegrating Wes and Keith back into the lineup if you even plan on doing that at all? And Frank basically said that, he's going to take it game by game, opponent by opponent, and that Wes and Keith will play again and probably sooner than later. Just because he doesn't want them, especially as guys in their early to mid-30s, to go cold, to receive too many DMPs in a row. They're solid players. They're proven players. They're guys who, you know, frankly, could have had bigger roles on other teams. And now that's me talking, not Frank talking. That was basically the gist of what he was saying. So I do expect with the Lakers playing the Pistons on Saturday, you know, that's probably a game you see Wes and maybe Keith reemerge. But I think the story of this game, and, you know, I've done a post-game pod now off of, I think, every game. Maybe there was one I skipped. And I don't know how many times I've had to say this, but LeBron James, 27 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, his second triple-double of the season, his 96th of his career. And with his third shot, ended up passing Wilt Chamberlain for third all-time on the all-time made field goal list. So now he only trails Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Karl Malone, the top two leading scorers of all time, who, you know, LeBron is third on that list. So only a matter of time, frankly, until he gets up to that Malone level. We'll see if he can reach Kareem. But just a another great game from LeBron. Looking at it, his assist to turnover ratio 5-1. He had 10 assists, 2 turnovers. So a very efficient ball handling and passing and playmaking game from him. 2 of 5 from deep. So keeping with his 40% 3-point shooting, 12 of 19 overall. That's around, 60 something percent. LeBron is just, I know that he doesn't have the best all-in-one metrics. In some cases, that's Jokic. In some cases, it's Embiid. In some cases, it's Kawhi or KD or Giannis. Like, there are some guys right now that, if you're going purely off of stats, you might have LeBron 4th, 5th, 6th in the MVP race. But I just think with what he's been able to do, AD had 13 points, 2 assists, 5 of 8 shooting. Like, AD has not been himself offensively from a scoring standpoint, or output rather. And LeBron has stepped up and really been, I think, better than last season. And that's what, essentially Frank said after the game, that his 3-point shooting has elevated him to a different level. LeBron basically said that he thinks he's gotten better and that he's having a better season than last season. And, some of that, of course, is always lip service to an extent. Guys are always saying that a player is improving or getting better. But I do think that in this case, it's legitimate. Like, LeBron has never shot threes at this level, both from a rate and attempt standpoint, but also from his percentage. And this is the best high volume 3-point shooting of his career. And it does not seem like a fluke. He has been pretty consistent. If you look at the game logs and the box scores, game to game, he's been pretty consistent. Still having some free throw troubles, was 1 for 2, airball the free throw. But, that's really the only thing you can criticize with his game at this point, is his free throw shooting. But we've also seen him make them when he needs to and make them when they count. So I think LeBron has as good of a case right now. And, I don't know if that's because I'm too close to the situation and have seen every game, but I think he has really risen to the moment in the biggest games. Like, even thinking about the Philly game, I felt was the best player on the floor overall, even though they lost. And, the Boston game was a little bit of a downer, but still made some big plays down the stretch. And I just think, the Milwaukee game, this game, definitely blanking on a few others. Even the Cleveland game, it wasn't a big game on paper necessarily, but it would have been a disappointing loss with the way that trip was going. And for him to turn it on the way that he did, particularly in that 4th quarter when he had 21 points, like, I just think we've now seen it. Again, I don't know how many times I've started this podcast with LeBron is the story of the night, but it feels like it's been basically half the season. And, there's probably been other games we could have said that. So I think LeBron definitely, what was the story of the game, but, going through, and we're still looking for a title for this box score section. I got a bunch of submissions. I got to comb through them, maybe do a Twitter poll. If you guys are listening and you have a suggestion for this section of the podcast, please let me know on Twitter, on Instagram, on the Athletic comment section. And I will definitely, throw those in the hat and consider them. But looking at the box score here, AD had a weird game. Like I said, 13 points, only 8 shots. AD should never take 8 shots. And he played 33 minutes. So it wasn't like he ended up, playing 25 minutes and kind of resting in the second half. Like, he played a solid amount of minutes. And, if AD is playing 33 minutes, he should have 15 shots. So that's, I think, quite, inexcusable, to be honest, from him. Marc Gasol, I think I was actually a little disappointed in Marc Gasol's defense versus Jokic. He actually made Jokic look quick and fast at times, which is very difficult to do. But Mark tried to force him left a few times, and Jokic scored on those opportunities. There's some paint catches and post catches where he just got by him. I think Mark did a better job against Joel Embiid than he did against Nikola Jokic, which was not something I was expecting. Dennis Schroeder had a bounce back game. You know, he's kind of been up and down the past couple of weeks. Has not really been himself after that first, you know, 2-3 weeks. And, you know, but he had 21 points on 7-9 shooting, very efficient. He had that double dive play where he forced the backcourt violation, in part by his hustle, tipping the ball, diving for it, then running after it again and diving for it again to kind of make sure that it went off of Denver. So, you know, he I think looked really good in this game. And if we're judging Dennis, you know, we are projecting towards the playoffs. I think everything we do in terms of Lakers analysis should be geared towards the postseason, right? Because this team, we know, you know, barring a major injury or a major COVID, widespread COVID situation, this team is going to walk into home court advantage, if not a top three seed at a minimum. So I don't think there needs to be too much concern over the regular season and their record. You know, they might drop some games here and there that they shouldn't. But for the most part, I think, you know, we know what we're getting with the Lakers. Like, they are one of the, I think, the best team in the league, but at worst, a top three team. And in terms of regular season, I think they're going to walk into being, again, a top three seed in the West.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Judging things from a playoff lens, you know, Dennis having a performance like this against Denver, a team that the Lakers might see in the conference semifinals or conference finals, I think it bodes well. You know, I thought that, you know, defensively, he hung with Will Barton and Jamal Murray. You know, he continues to be a very good point of attack pressure defender. Offensively, I think he's really starting to pick his spots better and have a better distribution of shooting versus passing. Not forcing things, not holding the ball. You know, I think he's just really finding a nice groove within the offense. And you know, that was something that was going to take time. And now that we're at the, 23 game mark, like it makes sense that he's starting to kind of hit that, rhythm. But I think deserves a shout out. The bench, I mean, the bench continues to perform at a high level since Frank shortened it. You know, Kuz, 2 steals, 2 blocks, really good defense, was very active, deflections, had a, you know, a great chase down block on Michael Porter Jr. On a 3 in transition. And, Trez, I think deserves a shout out for his defense, honestly. He had 13 points, but he looked playable. He looked playable against Denver after not looking playable against them with the Clippers in the conference semifinals. He looked playable, and the Lakers used him a little bit differently. They had him playing up, you know, up to touch defensively. They were not having him drop as deep and drop as much. But I think, you know, we saw what the sixth man of the year-esque version of Trez, you know, a Trez that's more engaged, a Trez that's more of himself on both ends, you know, looking more spry and athletic, and just kind of that, player that he was last season, and not the version of him in the bubble. You know, we saw how effective that player can be, and he's not perfect. And I still don't think this is a great matchup for him. I still think the Lakers are probably going to be at their best with AD and Keith, at the 5-4 or AD and LeBron, AD and Kuz, like some combination of like that against Denver is probably to me the best, the optimal lineup. But I thought Trez looked fine, and, you know, he can play 15 to 20 minutes against this team in a playoff series and not necessarily kill the Lakers, which he definitely killed the Clippers last year. Alex Crusoe, fun fact, was the only Laker that played out of the 11 to have a negative plus minus. Alex Crusoe plus minus King had a bit of an off night from that perspective, but of course was his usual self. I thought he defended Jamal Murray and Monte Morris well, pressuring the ball, navigating pick and rolls, doing Crusoe things. And then THT, behind it, I think Dennis and LeBron had the third best game of any Laker. Coming off the bench, 17 points, 8 of 12 shooting, had three steals, a block. We're really seeing THT coming into his own in terms of navigating screens, going downhill, finishing. Like we knew he had those things, but I think he's even doing them at a higher level now and doing them at a better pace. And then defensively, he's really using his length and timing and just kind of, feeling more comfortable and like he understands the Lakers' defensive schemes better. So I think he's looked really good. He has earned, to me, a spot in that nine-man rotation. And I really think that these nine players, the starters plus Trez, Kuz, Alex, and THT, like those nine guys have really shown they're the Lakers' best nine players right now. And that doesn't mean that can't change. I think Wes and Keefe will factor in at some point. And it wouldn't surprise me if it's a matchup-based type thing in the postseason with those guys where, maybe there's a series where like against the Clippers, I think both of those guys have value, right? Like I think Keefe, if the Lakers want to go small against the Clippers and go with 80 at the five, well, now all of a sudden Keefe, I think, has a bigger role. Likewise, if, they're going to be throwing the kitchen sink at Kawhi and PG, like you might want Wes out there as a aggressive perimeter defender. And as a guy who can then space the floor around LeBron and AD, probably better than THT can. So I think those guys are still going to factor in at some point. But I do think that the Lakers have found a really nice groove and rhythm with these nine guys. And they've been, again, they're best nine players. And it seems like every lineup combination for the most part is working right now with these nine players. So I think, it's going to be interesting to see how Frank and the coaching staff manages this moving forward. I don't think Wes Matthews and Markieff Morris signed and re-signed respectively to sit on the bench and not play at all. I think if there's like one thing to potentially be concerned with long-term, aside from just, the COVID and injury risks that, are always present. I do think it's going to be interesting to see how Wes and Keith, long-term kind of handle the benching and demotion. But for the most part, it's so far every indication is that it's been fine. We haven't heard of any pouting or anybody having any issue with it. So, Jared Dudley's been very vocal about he's going to handle, he and LeBron are going to handle any issues that come up like that. So I think, I don't anticipate that necessarily being a problem. But let's get into the open forum, the question part of this podcast. Got a lot of questions and my contacts are acting up, so I can't really read right now. But question from Sup, at SS Kate J. Do you think that since Kuz got paid, it helps him to play championship style basketball instead of worrying about stats? Yes, I do. I think that started in the bubble. Although I think you could have made the case last season that Kuz was playing for a contract. It is a thing. Contract year, is a thing. Guys tend to play better in contract seasons. I even look at a guy like Montrezl Harrell, who was in a contract season last year and, pre-bubble was looking like he was in line to earn, 12 to 18 million annually. And then he has a terrible bubble and ends up earning, basically 9 million annually. So I think contract years really can swing a player's contract, obviously. And for Kuz, I think now that he's gotten his contract, he is secured. He has a pretty clear role in this team as, the sixth or seventh man, potentially one of the closers, depending on the matchup. Like I think he has embraced defense. I think he's become a plus defender. I think he's lived up to his contract. And I know that, you know, with Kuz, you got to accept the some of the bad that comes with it, where, you know, occasionally he will call his own number. He will take a head scratching shot. He will drive and dribble the ball off his foot and just do something that kind of frustrates you. But overall, I think you have seen that buy-in from him defensively. You've seen the buy-in on the glass on both ends. And you've just seen him, I think, really grow into a productive two-way player that is a contributor on a championship-level team. So I do think that the contract situation has alleviated some of the pressure, some of the noise. You know, there's always going to be some level of noise around Kuz just because of how much buzz he had early on in his career. And, you know, I think the way that he's basically a star off the court despite not being a star on the court, right? Like, for as good as he is, he's not a star. He's not an all-star. And yet he's kind of treated that way in terms of, you know, being one of the faces of Puma and being in the you know, celebrity scene and different things. Like, you know, he's definitely more famous off the court, I think, than, you know, warranted based on his play. But he still is a productive, you know, two-way role player that I think really helps the Lakers and gives them a unique, you know, 6'8", 6'9", 6', you know, 6'9 guy who can, you know, defend multiple positions, shoot at a high level, you know, occasionally cut and attack off the dribble, get out in transition, rebound well now, you know, really set up his rebounding. So I think overall Kuz has been really impressive this season, you know, really since the bubble. And I do think the contract has played into that. So I got a question here about how Frank used Trez against the Nuggets. Again, I think just playing him up point to touch. I think a big part of it, honestly, is just Trez being in better shape, being in a better mental headspace, you know, being just playing at a higher level than he was with the Clippers in the bubble. Like that to me is the biggest difference more than anything. But I do think that the Lakers are really smart about how they use their help. And especially with Trez, they never leave him on an island. You know, they make sure that they have a guy ready to double, a guy to help that guy. Like, I just think, you know, they have game planned how to try to hide his weaknesses pretty well. And I think ultimately there will be teams that still exploit him. You know, I think if you really want to target him in the pick and roll, you can. But and you know, I think that he has post defense limitations just because of his size, where, you know, guys like Jokic or Embiid can still generate high percentage looks by you know, simply kind of creating some separation and then just rising and shooting over him. And, you know, though he is athletic, though he does have long arms, you know, the standing reach isn't the same as some of these guys. So they do have an advantage. But I think the Lakers have used Trez more effectively. And, you know, I think tonight was a good example of that. Tom Wadsworth at They Call Me Wads is this the best game we've played all season? Sure, it feels like it. That's a good question. It's up there. It's up there. Yeah, I might say. I mean, it's weird because, like, I want to say it might be the best win of the season. I'm looking at it right now. Like I look at the Dallas game and I'm like, okay, they whooped Dallas on Christmaps. And I know Kristaps Porzingis didn't play in that game, but you know, that to me was an emphatic win of Luka came into the season, all this buzz, you know, MVP favorite. Dallas is coming off of this impressive first round series against the Clippers. And you know, I think that the Lakers kind of humbled them and showed kind of what we see now, which is that Dallas has had some issues this season. Looking quickly, I mean, there's also the Houston games. Like, I think if you're saying like best end-to-end win, I might say either the first or the second Houston game, you know, because that team on paper to me was still a low-tier playoff team with James Harden. And you know, the Lakers basically forced the James Harden trade and forced his hand by embarrassing him in consecutive games. So I think one of those two games I would put ahead just because it was a complete performance. In terms of like best wins, I still think the Milwaukee win was very impressive. I think the Boston win was very impressive in terms of late game execution. And it wasn't pretty late game execution, but for the Lakers to find a way to win that one on the road, and you know, Alex to have that game winning defensive play, like, you know, I put the Boston and Milwaukee games in terms of just impressive, you know, outcomes. I put those two up there. So for me, I would probably put this one fifth behind some combination of the two Houston games, the Milwaukee game and the Boston game, because you know, although the final score was a 21-point rout, and they did outscore them outscored Denver by 33 points in the second half. Like, most of that was condensed to like the final, you know, 16, 18 minutes of the game. And while that is impressive, and you know, that is a better, I guess, outcome than, let's say, the Milwaukee game, I thought Milwaukee, given the opponent, given being on the road, and given some of the stakes and just kind of the perception of that matchup, that to me is just a better win. So, you know, we can agree to disagree if you view it differently, but to me, it's a top five win of the season. I guess if you want to split hairs, it's the best home win of the season, and I think that matters with the way the Lakers have struggled at home, only 5-4. I will say that for sure, this is the best home win of the season. No doubt about that. Again, the Dallas matchup's up there, but you know, Dallas has struggled, so I think I would give the edge to Denver. Let's get to a couple more here. Orlando Hat, at Orlando_Hat_17. Are THC and Caruso on the way to being the starting backcourt for Team USA? Yes. Yes, I expect Greg Popovich and Jerry Colangelo to reach out to them tomorrow, to invite them to the tryouts. And I'd be shocked if, I mean, honestly, okay, I'm not going to say anything crazy and say that they would deserve to be on the 12-man team. I think that both guys, like, as the 12th, either guy as the 12th man, like, would, like I imagine Alex Caruso in an international setting, like, just wreaking havoc defensively and doing Alex Caruso things. Like, that has value. Now, of course, is he a top 12 player, like, you know, that's eligible to make the Team USA? No. Is he a top five guard eligible to make Team USA? No. But I also think it's going to be interesting to see kind of how they field this roster, because, you know, it's going to be conflicting with the finals, potentially. And it's also going to be a situation, I mean, you just don't know, you know, what's going to be going on with COVID, you know, what stars are actually going to want to travel and play in the Olympics. So there's a lot of question marks. So I'm not going to say that Alex Caruso or THT will make the team, of course. I do think there's something to, we might have a weird Team USA this year that is not as orthodox of a roster as we've had in the past. So I guess that's my larger point.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Final one from Ali A. Unal at Layla Primes. Do you think Vogel will keep using nine-man playoff rotations, or will he play Wes and Keefe at some point? They don't even lace their shoes for garbage time. So the garbage time thing, and this is something that you know, coaches will say, sometimes if you're going to bench a vet, you know, a vet that thinks they should be playing, a vet that is proud, putting them in garbage time is a little disrespectful. So that's the reason why those guys didn't play today. For example, like, put in Quinn Cook, you put in Alphonso McKinney, you put in Devontae Kaycock, like, you put in one of those guys. You do not put in Markieff Morris and Wes Matthews. Like, if those guys are not going to play, playing them the last 5 minutes, last 3 minutes, it's considered by players a bit disrespectful. So that is why those guys didn't play tonight in garbage time. Now, I touched on the rotation a little bit. I do think come playoff time, it will be a nine-man rotation. And as of now, I think the starters are safe, unless it's just a horrible matchup for Mark. I think Kuz is safe. I think Alex is safe. And then I think it gets interesting, because I think Trez really could be a matchup-based player, depending on the team. And you could have matchups where Trez is better, and you could have matchups where Markieff Morris is better. So I could see it coming down to Keith versus Trez as the primary backup big. And then I think you have a THT versus Wes Matthews situation. And while THT, you know, is the fan favorite, is playing at a high level, Wes Matthews has played in many playoff games and started and played lots of minutes in many playoff games. And, you know, I think still will have some value depending on the matchup. So, you know, I think that's kind of my cop-out answer, is always depending on the matchup. You know, I look at a matchup with the Clippers as I could see Wes Matthews having value there. I look at a matchup with like the Nets. I think he could have value there. But, you know, a matchup with Denver, a matchup with Utah, like maybe less. So it's really going to come down to the matchups and what the Lakers need. But I do expect Wes and Keith to get back to playing more regular minutes. I still think Frank will probably go with a 9 or 10 man rotation on most nights. And it's just going to be some nights, you know, THT doesn't play. Some nights Wes doesn't play. Some nights Keith doesn't play. Some nights two of the three don't play. It's really just going to be a whatever Frank's feeling. But that should about wrap it up here. As always, I want to say thank you guys for listening. If you have any questions for me, have any feedback on the podcast, or just want to chat, definitely reach out to me on Twitter and Instagram at Jovan Buha. That's at JOVANBUHA. If you're not subscribed to the podcast or subscribed to The Athletic, you can do so at theathletic.com. You can do so off of my podcast links, one of my story links. And if you have not checked out my latest Anthony Davis feature, which went up today about the evolution of Anthony Davis, be sure to give that a read on The Athletic. I dive into part of him, you know, coming to LA, getting better as a player in LA, and the ways that the Lakers are experimenting with him this season, his passing, his three-point shooting, his perimeter defense, his leadership, and kind of trying to build a better Anthony Davis. And I do touch on, you know, offensively, he has not been the same, but defensively, he's basically in line with where he's always been. And then they're also experimenting with some stuff. So, you know, spoke with AD for the story, spoke with John Calipari, spoke with Jared Dudley, you know, had some quotes I was collecting from Frank Vogel, from LeBron. So I think if you have not read that story yet, you will enjoy it. But I will be back after the Pistons game on Saturday. Thank you guys for listening again.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.